that time of the month where we do the Blu-ray, 4K, all the physical media type stuff that we do here once a month. And this time around, I'm joined by a special guest, first time ever, and I appreciate having him on, Douglas Davidson. He is a fellow a colleague who's in my film critic circles. We are always commenting on each other's posts all the time, and I've been meaning to have him on, and so he gets some of the physical media stuff as well, and I thought, well, let's just see if we could get him on and hear his opinions on some of this stuff, and he seemed like a good candidate, and he was ready, willing, and able, as they say. So, but I'm not going to, I'm actually going to let you tell my listeners a little bit about yourself, how you got into this. You could give us a brief, you know, and what your roles are now, because I'll probably screw something up if I try to recap everything you're doing. So, anyway, let's let Doug tell you what he does, how he became a member of the North Carolina Film Critics, and what his roles are now.
Well, hello, everybody. And Adam, thank you for having me on. It is always a delight to chat with anybody about movies, and particularly with any member of the North Carolina Film Critics Association. So I'm delighted to do that. And I'm hoping, you know, that old adage, it's better to keep your mouth quiet and be thought of as a fool rather than open it and confirm it. So hoping that I don't step into anything today with anybody. But let's see. It is 2024. In 2016, I started my own website, Elements of Madness. I changed it from what it had been postgraduate school into sort of how it exists now as a film review site, film review and recommendation site. At the time, I was working for, as a film critic, a North Carolina-based site, Culture, which still operates today. And through them, I started sort of learning the ins and the outs of criticism, as it were, and taking it from something that I had been doing academically, but had never really done professionally. And it was always, I've always loved movies. I grew up watching movies. And as I went in through my academic circles with undergrad and grad school, sort of used that as a time to analyze film, but always from more of a literary or historical perspective than a technical one. But 2016 is where my journey sort of began. Since then, I've joined CEFCA, which is the Southeastern Film Critics Association, for those who don't know, and I am also a member of the Critics Choice Association. Joined both CEFCA and the CCA in 2019. So 2019 was a great year! And then, you know, everything else happened. But I run Elements of Madness. I'm the founder and head writer for it. My wife, Crystal Davidson, is our head editor, and we have a small group of writers and interviewers that contribute to the site in various capacities. I am currently getting ready to cover the South by Southwest Film Festival, and for a little while, I served as president of the North Carolina Film Critics Association, of which I am delighted to have served. To quote a film from last year, I am delighted to have served. I am delighted to have been of service, and now it is Nolte Manning the second's responsibility to oversee the organization. So delighted for him. But that's the very condensed version. And anyone that's interested in looking at my reviews, recommendations, or from anybody else, we are available. You can find that at elementsofmadness.com.
Yeah, and I'll be sure to put a link in the show notes at the bottom. We'll get that out to everybody in case they want to go look at the diligent work that you're doing on a regular basis. And
We do try. And the great thing about Elements of Madness is we are not beholden to any one particular genre, and particularly with the stuff that I personally did for Home Review this past month in February. It's all of it. It's everything. I've got every genre, crime, comedy, musical, drama, romance. It's all in there. Sometimes overlapping.
Quite a variety. And variety is the spice of life, as we all know. Yes.
That's right.
Yep. Well, you know, we're delighted to have you on. I know I've been meaning to reach out to you, and then I didn't have any. And I can do these shows alone, which I have before. But I think it's a lot more fun to have a co-host.
Absolutely.
Somebody that can banter it up and who knows a little bit about physical media. And I enjoy those a lot more, and it's just a lot more fun on my end of things. So, and I had reached out to several people, didn't work out, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to try. And it was kind of a last minute thing, and you were so gracious to step in and do it. And so I really, really appreciate it. But, so what we'll do is, as I said, you get some of the review product as well. And, so I normally do a chronological summation of the month's releases, and I will, and any time that I come across a title that you've received, or either if it's just a film that you've seen and you want to comment on that, you'd be more than welcome to stop me and put your comments in. So anyway.
You got it.
So we'll go back to February 6th and got a Scream Factory release here for me was Funeral Home. This was one that used to turn up on HBO quite a bit in the early days. You know, back in the early days of HBO, they would have package deals where they would buy a bunch of films in a package and just run them over and over and over again. And Funeral Home was one of those films. I never saw it. Interestingly enough, I always wanted to. The title obviously intriguing for a kid who liked horror films as I did, but just never saw it, and really hasn't had any good physical media releases up until now. And the quality of the picture is quite good for a film that's 42 years old. It's kind of a slow burn type thing, and it's about this young girl, teenage girl, who goes back home for the summer to spend some time with her grandmother, who has converted her former funeral. She used to run a funeral home, and now it's a bed and breakfast. And strange things are happening, as they say. And I don't want to get be spoilerish about it, but there's elements of Psycho here. And you know, I thought it was it is a slow burn. It's a PG rated horror film, which makes it even more interesting because that was at a time when there were just most. Well, actually, it says it's R-rated on the back here, but I remember it being PG on when it turned up on Cinemax at one point. Maybe they've revised
it. I was about to say, wonder if they re-rated it.
It could have been, because that does happen. But it's a Canadian horror film directed by the director, and I'm just William Fruitt, that's the name. Yeah, it was. So anyway. There's a new commentary here. There's new audio interviews. There's a new interview with the director of photography, filming locations, radio spots, all that type stuff. So if you're like me and you're of a certain age who had cable in the early 80s and you remember this popping up, it's worth your time if you had seen it back then or just always wanted to. And like I said, audio and video were solid on this release. And I was just delighted to have it. It's, like I said, certainly not the best film I've ever seen, but it's an interesting little film, and it keeps you intrigued all the way. It's very atmospheric, and I would recommend it. So Funeral Home from Scream Factory.
they do put out some solid releases. I've got at least two in my stack over here. One of them I'd for sure recommend, and we'll get to that. One is a little iffy.
Well, that's okay too. Yeah, so we've got McCabe and Mrs. Miller was a Criterion release. I got the Blu-ray of this years ago when they did that, and it's a film that's held in high esteem by most serious cinephiles. Robert Altman's take, a revisionist take on Robert Altman does a Western, I guess is the best way to put it. And famously behind the scenes, Warren Beatty and Altman clashed. They didn't get along very well. And so but sometimes tumult on a film set can result in an interesting film. And McCabe and Mrs. Miller is a very interesting film. I think it takes more than one viewing to really kind of warm up to it. It's kind of not the kind of thing that you really can get the first time around. I don't think so. It took me a couple of times anyway, but it's Julie Christie, who was Warren Beatty's squeeze at that time, I guess you would say. And it's also legendary because the cinematographer Vilmos Zsigmond, pre-exposed the film so that it would have a certain look. when he was photographing it. And of course, Vilmos Zsigmond is one of the great cinematographers who did, you know, a lot of work with Brian De Palma and Deliverance and so many other films that we talk about still to this day. But yeah, he had some really interesting collaborations with Altman, and this is one of them. But I did not get the 4K, but it's a 4K upgrade, and all the extras from the old Blu-ray from 2016, I believe it was, or maybe it's 2017. They've all been ported over. But McCabe and Mrs. Miller getting the 4K Ultra HD upgrade there. And another Screen Factory release is The Terminal Man, which is based on a Michael Crichton novel. I did not get a review copy of this either, but I do remember it quite well. I've never actually seen the film. I'm familiar with it, I should say. George Siegel is a man who has violent impulses. He has a thing put in his brain to control his violent impulses. But like I said, Michael Crichton wrote the source material, the novel in which it was based. And of course, this is pre-Jurassic Park, pre-Twister Michael Crichton. But one of his earlier...
Michael Crichton was attached to Twister?
Yeah, he wrote the screenplay. Yep.
Wow. After between Jurassic Park and ER, I went down a rabbit hole of Michael Crichton stuff when I was younger. I never read The Terminal Man, and I haven't seen it either, so I can't comment on that. But if I didn't have to work tonight, I would have to go back to Twister, which my wife loves that movie, so there would be no twisting her arm on that one. Wow, I did not know that.
He did. I think he's a co-writer. I want to say his wife co-wrote it with him or something. But he's definitely involved in the screenplay. I know that. It was a spec script that was sold when he was a very hot commodity around that time, when he was a lot of his stuff was, getting sold. So yeah. Terminal Man's one of the earlier adaptations of his work, and I think it was just the year after he made his directorial feature debut with Westworld. So. I'm a big fan of Westworld, but anyway, no extras on that, but it's getting a first time ever Blu-ray release, The Terminal Man. That's Shout or Screen Factory, not sure which, but one of the two. So we have The Big Country, directed by William Wyler. This is a Kino release. It's a nearly 3-hour Western, and it's about two families who are feuding. Back in the end, I know you and I have discussed Westerns that you're not a huge Western fan. This one,
so
to me,
weird.
Yeah, well, it's okay. It's all good. It's all subjective. The Big Country is one that's held in high esteem by a lot of people. And this is William Wyler, who directed Ben-Hur. This is a terrific transfer, I must say. This is a reissue of it's previously been issued by Kino Lorber, but they reissued it with a slip case, and there's audio commentary here, documentary interviews with some of the cast. And it is quite a cast. You've got Gregory Peck, Gene Simmons, Carol Baker, Charlton Heston, Burl Ives. I think Burl Ives and Chuck Connors, too. Burl Ives won an Oscar for this film, I believe. I find it to be a little bit overblown, I must admit. It's extremely well photographed. It's a solid film, but it is a bit overblown, and it wears out its welcome. The length, you definitely feel it. But I know a lot of people hold it in high esteem. So who am I to argue? But
well, anyway. If I may,
yes,
I've got one for you.
Well,
I don't know if you saw this one, The Sting of Death, came out on the 6th. You got that one?
I got I did not get an actual one like you did. I got a test pressing of it, and I haven't gotten around to seeing it. Now, did you watch this? Did you watch
Sting of Death? Oh, no, I absolutely did, and this is why I wanted to bring this up.
Let's talk about it.
For those that don't know, The Sting of Death, it is a film set in Japan. It's from Japan. This is a first-time Blu-ray release. This is from Radiance Films. Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar with Radiance Films, they're a physical media boutique, the likes of, you might have heard of Criterion, you might have heard of Arrow Video, Cauldron, Synapse, stuff like that. This is relatively new. 2024 is their second year of doing business. It was founded by someone who used to do work with Arrow and wanted to go in a different direction. The Sting of Death, if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Kohei Oguri is the director for this. It's an adaptation from a novel. It is set in post-World War II Japan with a couple who is undergoing, we're calling it strife is an understatement, because the premise of it is that the wife finds out that the husband has had an affair, and it's about the two of them sort of at odds with each other between, I'm trying to think of how to express this. between the marriage is over and we can't separate. And the way that they talk about it in terms of they can't separate is one of them has to die. There's no divorce. It's either one of them dies or they stay together. And this premise, you get it from the very beginning of the movie. So the rest of the film is them dealing with that. And what's fascinating about it is the context, both of the husband, the context that's provided by the wife, but also the period of time that this is taking place in, where the wife is the one who has been violated, if you will, in this marriage. And yet everyone's like, I think you need to go somewhere and calm down. You need medical help. Why are you responding like this, even though your husband's been carrying on with a woman and doing all these things? But it's sort of fascinating through the larger context of the film. And what's great is similar to some of the other home releases you've mentioned with all these bonus features, Radiance also includes those as well, where possible. Some of their releases, and I've got one other, I think, to talk about. Some of them have a bunch of different things where they're archived materials. Sometimes they're new materials, but they always have an essay and other restoration information in it. The Sting of Death is not a movie that I recommend in the sense that it is a great time at the movies, but is a really well done film, not only in its execution and structure, but the restoration itself is really wonderful. This is only a high definition restoration, so it's not 2K, it's not a 4K, either UHD or just Blu-ray 4K. But it's clean, it's clear, even though it's got its original monaural soundtrack, it still comes through as if well balanced. And I've got a 5.1, no Atmos at my house. I've got a 5.1, so it comes through the front, but it's still very clear. It looks great. It's got the same grain that you would anticipate, but it's still a very clear and lovely image as well. And with this particular film, there's some calling it playful is the wrong way to put it, but there's some playfulness in the direction that goes between sort of very realistic but also very theatrical imagery. So some stuff is shot on location, some stuff is shot on a stage, and it gives those specific moments a slightly different feeling as they're portrayed. So that is a film that Radiance Films, they do some incredible work, and this is one that I definitely recommend.
Oh, very good. I'm so glad you talked about that, because I didn't get around to looking at my test pressing that they sent me, but I mean, those are, you know, it's the same quality. You just don't get all the packaging, which you get the O-ring on yours, the little thing on the side there. Not the O-ring, the little.
Oh, the OBI strip? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. So yeah, I love those. Those are so cool. So.
Oh, I agree. And what I love about with Radiance, other than other folks, and if you listen to this podcast, I imagine that you have some sense of physical media and the different ways in which they get packaged and the things that come with them. Mm-hmm. What Radiance does is this little strip, it's part of the liner, and you can take it out so that you get the full scope of the cover art that's on here. And what Radiance does, they actually do reversible. So you can have classic art on one side and then this new cover on the other. I like keeping the OBI strip because I like having quick reference to the director, the writer, the description, and all this other stuff. Because part of why I like having physical media is you never know when you're going to need a quick reference.
That's right.
So I like
having
all that together.
You never know. That is a good point. Yeah, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear about that. And like I said, it's on the to-do list. I just didn't get to it. There's
you can't get to everything. Many.
Yeah.
Can't get to everything.
Yeah, that's true. It does happen. Well, we'll go through a couple more Kino titles that got issued on this end. We have, from 1976, we have Burnt Offerings. This is directed by Dan Curtis, who was a legendary television director who directed, you know, tons of television films. And he created the Dark Shadows television series. He was the producer of the original Kolchak, the Night Stalker film, and the director of the sequel, The Night Strangler, although he and Darren McGavin hated each other's guts, so he didn't do anything, had anything to do with the television series. But this is the only theatrical film that he made outside of it. He made two theatrical Dark Shadows films, the first of which is very good, House of the Dark Shadows, the second of which is not so good, but I don't think that's his fault, because I think the studio took it away from him and recut it, and there was about 30 minutes hacked out of the film that to his dying day he wanted it reinstated, but so far it hasn't happened, unfortunately. But Burnt Offerings is a haunted house thriller with Karen Black, Oliver Reed, Burgess Meredith, Eileen Heckert, Betty Davis in this as well. And it's not the worst thing I've ever seen, but it is kind of, you know, Dan Curtis was a television director for a good reason, and he was good in the medium of television, but when he tried to do theatrical stuff, just didn't quite, he just didn't have the scope that a director would need for that sort of thing. So he kind of probably needed to stay in his own lane, as it were. But this is, you know, I have a fondness for Burnt Offerings because it came out when I was 6 years old, and I remember it well, and there's nostalgia value for me, but I can't really say it's a great film. But, you know, I don't know. I'm glad to have it in my collection, and it's a reissue. It's previously been issued by Kino. Again, they put a slipcase on this new edition, and it's a new audio commentary here, and there's an archival commentary with Dan Curtis, Karen Black, and William F. Nolan, and an interview with the screenwriter William F. Nolan as well. So theatrical trailer. So yes, Burnt Offerings has been reissued. And so we'll talk about a couple others. As I said, we've got Witness for the Prosecution is a wonderful film. I already had a copy of this. I picked it up a couple of years ago, but it's been reissued here, Kino Lorber. But it's a Billy Wilder, the legendary Billy Wilder. This is probably the best courtroom drama I think I've ever seen, or at least really, one of the top five. It's Tyrone Power and Marlena Dietrich and Charles Laughton. And it's about a man on trial for a wealthy widow's murder after he suspiciously profits from her will. And there's a twist ending. It's one of those great twist endings that you really don't see coming. I know the first time I saw it, it was a jaw dropper. And I don't want to say too much more other than that. But Witness for the Prosecution is one of the great films of Billy Wilder's career that people don't talk about. I could not recommend it more. Just because it's an older film, 1957, it's black and white. Don't let that stop you, because it's a wildly entertaining film with some terrific performances there. And again, reissued by Kino Lorber. I think there's a new commentary on this. Yes, there's a new commentary by a Facebook friend of mine, Joseph McBride, who also is the author of Billy Wilder, Dancing on the Edge. So, and he's pretty thorough when he does those sorts of things. So it's probably a good commentary, I would say. Probably well researched. So anyway, maybe worth picking up again if you already have it. OSS 117 is a 5-film collection. These were kind of they came out around. It's a series of films made between 1963 and 1968, and these were I guess you would say competition for the James Bond films. They've never been issued together, but I've not seen any of these films. But as I said, there are 5 of them. You get the trailers for all of them, and they are they're French. So it's the French, the France's answer to James Bond. So OSS 117, 5-film collection. So yes, so there's that. And one more Kino for that day. We have the Thomas Crown Affair, starring Steve McQueen, Faye Dunaway, remade, of course, with Pierce Brosnan and Rene Russo in 1999. I like them both. I like the original 68 version, and I like the remake as well. A lot of people say that it's a little dated because of the visual style, because it has a multi-screen technique where they show different things going on at the same time. I love it. I just love that sort of thing. And Norman Jewison, whom we just lost in January, he passed away. The great Norman Jewison directed this the year after he directed the Oscar winning In the Heat of the Night. And it has terrific cinematography by Haskell Wexler, the legendary cinematographer, and a score by Michel Legrand, who composed the score for one of my favorite films, of course, Summer of 42. And this is another one of his great scores. The Windmills of Your Mind is the title theme from the film. One of the great film songs, I would say. If you're going to list songs from films, this would make it in that top 50, I would say, of all time. It's The Windmills Will Be Your Mind. It's a terrific, terrific song, and it's well used in the film. And you get the archival commentary by Jewison, and you get the commentary by film historians Lim Dobbs and the late Nick Redman, who was also a Facebook friend that sadly passed a couple of years ago. He was just a wonderful person and dearly missed. And the interview with Norman Jewison here, and the title designer Pablo Ferro. So anyway, Thomas Crown.
Interesting. I found it interesting that they re-released this, and there was it was, I think, originally released as a anniversary edition a couple of years ago.
That's right.
And then they just decided to re-release it with absolutely nothing new. There was nothing added to it. This was I got to review this one myself. Uh-huh. And it was the first time watching the Thomas Crown Affair. I do agree with the idea that it is dated due to the presentation style, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I think sometimes calling things dated suggests that we've grown past a certain look or sound or something artistically. But it was also indicative of that period. It's got the kind of editing style that when Soderbergh did Ocean's 11 was doing some of these techniques with the overlapping and the editing of images that was trying to evoke that same period. So to call it outdated in a denigrating way, I think maybe we need to revisit the film and consider it, because it's very interesting by overlapping those things, being able to see everything as they're happening concurrently. And yeah, it's a stylistic choice, but they carry it through. And in particular, when you think of the polo sequence and you're watching the different squares as they show up and seeing how he's playing, that's indicative of her watching him.
Mm-hmm.
And the close introspection.
That's right.
So it's not just style. I saw it as substance, but I saw the remake first, and mm-hmm. So watching this, I was curious to see where they'd make changes and everything else, and seeing that they not only changed it from a bank to the art world, from the original to the remake, they changed some of the execution and they changed everything else while keeping the essence of it. But I liked that Dunaway here was still always a strong character. She was in charge of herself. She had autonomy and agency. She still falls in love with him, which creates drama. But I did really appreciate the back and forth and how it's executed. It is, I think I have a preference for the remake, if only because I, A, saw it first, and B, I love Brosnan and Rene Russo, as well mm-hmm. as Dennis Leary and some of the other cast. But I see where people who saw this then had a deep appreciation for it, enough to go, hey, let's make a new one for a new generation. But I think these two films can sit side by side and tell similar stories with very clear different outcomes, because the remake changes some stuff in the ending to give it a happy ending.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Much more downbeat ending, which
oh yeah,
I enjoy downbeat endings sometimes, and this was one that worked for me in the original. I mean, I like the remake, but the ending in the original does work for me. So I'm glad you got to see it. That's good. Yeah.
Which did in terms of home releases from this day, did you get to see Waitress by any chance?
I did not. If you want to talk about it, you can. I did not get a copy of that. The Waitress musical from 2023, yes.
Yep. They did a home release. They put it briefly in theaters, I think, in December mm-hmm. of 2023, and then almost immediately put it on VOD and then physical format. I had seen the original rom-com is one way to describe it. The comedy doesn't come from the romance, let's put it that way. But this is the musical adaptation where the music was written and composed by singer-songwriter Sarah Bareilles, who is also an actor. She is, I think, in Girls 5 Eva is the name of the sort of pop girl pop comedy show. I've never seen it. But I love her as a singer-songwriter. And so I wanted to check this out. I have her album, but I've never seen her perform in the show. And she performs as the lead character who is going through the story, which is essentially, for those who don't know, that there is a woman by the name of Jenna. She is married. She works at a diner where she is the pie maker, and she makes recipes out of her imagination, throwing things together. Everybody that eats them loves them. And she happens to find out that she's pregnant. She does not want to be pregnant. She's really not in a happy marriage with her husband. And when she goes to her doctor to find out what's going on, instead of her regular doctor, there's a new gentleman that has come to town, and the two of them develop a romance. Now, the fact that she is married, there's definitely some issues there. I'm not one to judge, but it's a very unhappy, abusive, manipulative marriage that she wants to get out of but doesn't have the means. And through the story, she changes, not just physically through being pregnant, but through this new relationship where she can sort of find ways in community to get out of it. There's some other characters as well that are dealing with their own issues of romance that I found wonderful, particularly in the musical, because they make them more adult and more, let's have a serious conversation about the complexity of love, romance, and sex. And it runs a little over 2 hours, I believe. They shot this, I think, with two live audiences and then without an audience at all, so that they could get up close, so that they could shoot different things. If you've seen, for example, Hamilton on Disney Plus, it was shot and designed in a similar way, in which live audience, you hear people responding, but they also edit it in a way that it has a cinematic feel. If you like Sarah Bareilles' music, and or if you've seen Waitress the movie, then I would highly recommend this. It has zero bonus features, which is frustrating for me as someone who enjoys like a behind the scenes or something else. But the presentation on the disc that you get is absolutely wonderful. It sounds great. It looks great. Definitely recommend it.
Very good to hear. I'm so glad you were able to give us a more in-depth look at that, because I did not get that. So that's where you're very useful, you see. So you serving an important purpose here. So. Filling in the gaps, as it were. Woo. Yeah, terrific. Well, just a couple more from February the 6th. We have The Road to Shame, which is a Kino proper, not Kino Studio Classics. They have that line, and they have the regular Kino titles. I've not seen this one, but it's directed by Edward Molinaro, and it's about a expose, about a working class man who tries to expose a gang of organized criminals involved in sex trafficking. I didn't get a review copy of this one, but The Road to Shame, 1959, just wanted to mention that one. And Peacock is a release from IndiePix. It's a horror film, an indie horror film about the psychosexual journey of a young woman into the dark recesses of the Africaner psyche and its compromised past. And so that, as I said, a release from IndiePix. So we'll move on to February the 13th. Quite a few releases here. Oh, yeah. You can talk about a couple of these. I think a couple of your Screen Factory releases come from this day. And we can talk about, the Marvels I didn't get. But the Marvels is out there, the latest in the maybe the last one for a while in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because I think they've really shot themselves in the foot. But, we could go on all day about that. But, I think everybody knows that story already. So, the Marvels didn't do very well, but it's out on 4K. If you want to get it, you can get it. I didn't see it. The bad word of mouth just kind of scared me away. So, anyway, we'll
I will at least say I did get a digital copy to review. Okay. And if you are listening to this and you did like the Marvels and you want to check out the home release, watch it with the commentary. It has got a feature-length audio commentary with the director, Nia DaCosta, and the VFX supervisor, Tara DeMarco. It is not only full of wonderful tidbits in terms of practical versus VFX and where they use one versus the other, but DaCosta herself is an enormous nerd. And so hearing her just get so excited about the approach that they took in the film, stuff with characters, stuff that she wanted to do that they couldn't do in the movie, it's one of the reasons why I love bonus features, is sometimes you get stuff like this where you can just get a deeper dive. However you feel about the movie, you can learn something about what the filmmaker and their team wanted to do. So I would at least recommend it for that. If you enjoyed the Marvels, I found it to be a good time, but I can't speak on it in a physical format because sure. All I got was the digital.
Well, good enough, and that's good to know about the commentary, because sometimes they are interesting, and that's good to know. Yeah, very, very good. The Columbia Classics, a collection, Volume 4, which I did not get a review copy of this. I'm probably going to pick this up when the price drops low enough from my pocketbook, but it hasn't yet, but I'm waiting. But I did get Volume 3, and I was quite pleased with it. These are incredible sets. I highly recommend people to support these. And pick up these releases, because they do such a great job. And on this latest one, you get His Girl Friday, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, Kramer versus Kramer, Starman, Sleepless in Seattle, Punch Drunk Love. All of those films are either good to great, I would say. And as a bonus, you get the entire Starman TV series, which was kind of a quasi-sequel to the film. And it takes place about, I think, 10 or 15 years after the events of the original Starman. I love Starman. I love Kramer versus Kramer. I love Punch Drunk Love. Those are all perfect movies for me. And the others are extremely are very good. So there you go. And it's housed in a beautiful case with a book and all that stuff. So, yeah, the latest Hunger Games, the prequel, I guess you would call it. I didn't see this one either. The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. 2 hours and 45 minutes of another Hunger Games installment just didn't really – it wasn't too enticing for me, the prospect of that, so I skipped it. But it's out there from Lionsgate, folks. Footloose has been issued in a steelbook from Paramount, mm-hmm. a 4K Ultra HD upgrade. You got yours. I got mine.
Oh, you got the steelbook.
I got the steelbook. I did. Yeah, it's nice. It's nice packaging. This is the transfer has been getting some, kind of bad word of mouth. It's definitely a step up from the Blu-ray, but I will say that when there are scenes that are, wide shots, like the first establishing shot in the film, the quality of the picture does kind of vary. Like when you have tight shots, it seems like the detail is there, but mm-hmm. when you have establishing shots, I noticed it did look a little questionable. So the transfer is hit and miss, but the soundtrack, the audio on this is terrific. I've got 7.1 here, and boy, those rear channels were getting a workout when the musical sequences came on. So we'll say that. But Footloose, Paramount has issued this. No new extras that I'm aware of, just all the stuff they ported over from the Blu-ray release. But it's good stuff, so if you don't have it, it's certainly an upgrade over the Blu-ray transfer, which I think had a lot of digital noise reduction. So there you go.
And if you weren't aware, I personally am not a big steelbook fan. I like them when the art is good, mm-hmm. or if it's interesting in terms of just the design. The Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1, for example, it looks like a cassette case, just like he has to listen to in the movie, so it's sort of fun that way. This one is similarly designed, where it has sort of an 80s vibe, the purple and the blue and varying colors, and it looks like a cassette. Awesome. So I at least thought that was a clever design if you're a steelbook collector. But something else I have to give Paramount credit for here is that it's not only a 4K release, but they also include that Blu-ray. So you are able to get that multi-format. So if you have a preference, you can watch it in the 4K, or you can go and see the previously released Blu-ray edition. Because sometimes there's a difference enough in the versions where you go, you know what, this is fine, but I'd prefer this other version. So I do like it when they provide the multiple editions.
Oh, yeah, you're probably going to want to go with the 4K in this case, because that Blu-ray, it does have a lot of digital noise reduction. So mm-hmm. this new one, even though it is – the new transfer, even though it is problematic, it's still – it's enough of an improvement that, you probably want to go that route. But, people can mm-hmm. choose, like you said.
Yeah.
So we have Priscilla from 2023. This was Sofia Coppola's take on the romance between Elvis and Priscilla – who would eventually become Priscilla Presley once she married Elvis. I found the movie to be, I saw the film, I didn't see the physical media release of it. The film was fine. Didn't love it, didn't hate it, but, you know, it's out there on Blu-ray from Lionsgate. Just wanted to mention that.
It is a movie that exists.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
That is
a, And we'll we can move along. We have a couple of Scream Factory release, Shout Factory releases, and these might be the ones you want to talk about. We have first off Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny, which is Jack Black, Kyle Gass, you know, resurrecting their characters from the band that they formed together and getting their own feature film where they go and look for a magical guitar pick. It's fine for what it is. It's, you know, it's kind of, again, hit and miss. But if you, it depends on your sense of humor, which is subjective, you know. But it's good to know that it's out on Blu-ray and you get some extras here, audio commentary, deleted extended scenes, archival featurettes. I think a lot of this stuff was previously issued on the old DVD or something. But you know, good enough transfer. And, you know, like I said, it is what it is. So.
Yeah, I didn't review this one. A member of my team did, and that is basically what he said. He thought it was a great transfer, certainly, and a wonderful upgrade from the DVD. The movie, it's definitely subjective. And I listened to specific songs from the album they released from Pick of Destiny more than I have ever revisited the movie.
Yeah, right. I gotcha. I totally understand. Yeah, sometimes that does happen. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, it's a pseudo transition because there's another movie that Shout released via their Scream Factory label that is equally stupid and yet tickles me to no end. So I can talk about that, or if you had more on Tenacious D.
I was going to let you move along to the next one, which I believe you may be referring to Willy's Wonderland.
Willy's Wonderland.
Nicolas Cage being issued in 4K for the first time ever, so take it away.
Okay, I have now reviewed this movie 3 times, okay? I reviewed it for its initial release, thought it was a good time. Home release came out, checked it out, bonus features, etc., and then now for the 4K. So I have gone through this movie. I will be one of the first people to tell you that it is super dumb, but I have a great time with it. I have a great time with it because I enjoy some of the choices and decisions that they make in order to have this horror comedy supernatural slasher film work. And part of that comes from the fact that Nick Cage plays a guy with no name who does not speak at all. And he just responds and reacts to people in that way. But we get enough from the way that he behaves, from the car that he drives that breaks down, which is how he ends up in a small town in North Carolina and has to work off getting his car fixed by being a janitor overnight in a defunct child's entertainment place called Willy's Wonderland. That I feel like we get enough about him to understand how he can handle the circumstance without wigging out, as it were. But the premise is, as I just said, and there are always, you know, you need a sacrificial lamb, as it were, to let the blood flow so that Cage can do what Cage does. And that comes in the form of a former survivor from Willy's Wonderland and her friends that want to burn the place down. And they want to go in and rescue the guy because the guy won't come out of the building, and he won't come out of the building because he wants his car back in the morning. The only way he gets his car back is if he cleans the place. So it's not a film you take seriously at all in the slightest. And in terms of this 4K release, this is the odd thing where I would say the Blu-ray is better. And for me, the reason why is because the HDR that they have on here, so you get that high dynamic range, you get more realistic picture, but that also means that while some of the colors in here are a little bit more vibrant, it's a dark film already. It's taking place at night. You're in darkly lit rooms. So it becomes a little harder to see some of the expressions and details in the characters. Now, on close-ups, it works really well to see, particularly in this Willy Wonderland place, it's like a Chuck E. Cheese. So you've got these automated creatures. On close-ups, you can see a better look at the rusted metal. You could get more of the wear and tear from how they're supposed to look worn down and scary, but you lose some of the detail in being able to see what people look like in these darker sequences. So, another thing that's really odd is while it has all of the bonus features from the previous Blu-ray, it's actually missing one gallery. It's an image gallery of behind-the-scenes stuff. So for people that are looking for as much material to get behind the scenes as possible, this edition actually won't give it to you. You'd need to go find the old Blu-ray. But at least the good thing is compared from one Blu-ray release to this one, they didn't just reskin the disc and throw it out. There's a new menu and there's some other new design features. But between the two, I think the movie is a lot of fun. This looks great. It sounds great. But I would recommend the Blu-ray over it. You still get the vibrancy of the colors. You just still get, because you don't have that natural darkness that the HDR brings, you can actually see more of what's happening.
Yeah, I get your point. I looked at it, and yeah, it's like you said, in the close-ups, it is pretty pretty spectacular. But yeah, the dark stuff. You bring up a good point. So yeah, if you are a fan of Willy's Wonderland, it's out there in 4K for from Scream Factory, and I know it does have its fans. So
it's, you may not be among them, but I'll recommend it.
Well, you know, it is what it is, as they say. But you know, you get it on its wavelength or you don't. At times I felt like I did, but you know, there were times when I didn't. So it kind of a mixed bag. I will move on to the Eric Romare box set from Criterion that they previously issued an Eric Romare box set a couple of years ago. That was the Moral Tales, and he was a terrific French director. I find his films very, very interesting. I've been a fan of his work for a long time, for about 20 years now, since I first discovered them when I originally saw The Moral Tales on DVD when Criterion put them out years ago, and they reissued them on Blu-ray in 2020, I think it was. But essentially, his plots are the same thing. There's romantic entanglements, usually in The Moral Tales, every character is tempted to cheat, and how they do or don't is usually what the films are about. In this series of films, The Tales of the Four Seasons, this is basically the same story with different characters, and each one takes place in a different season. There's a tale of springtime, tale of winter, tale of summer, and a tale of autumn, and each one features characters who are juggling multiple romantic partners and trying to figure out which ones are the best for them. And they're just delightful films. They're very dialogue-driven, not a lot of plot. You know, a lot of what happens in these films comes in the form of what the characters say or don't say. And the Before trilogy of films, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and all those films with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, those three Before Midnight. Yeah, those films were very much influenced by Eric Romare. So if you haven't seen an Eric Romare film, I would say to at least try one of his films and see what you think, because I find them to be just really probing looks at the romantic longings of the human of humans that we romantic entanglements that we all sometimes find ourselves in or have found ourselves in. There's a new interview program here recorded at Romare's house featuring some of his collaborators, excerpts of radio interviews. There's a documentary from 2005 on the making of A Tale of Summer. So it's a beautiful box set from Criterion in Eric Romare's Tales of the Four Seasons. And so we'll just run through a couple of these real fast. A couple more Kino releases that I'll mention. Let's Dance from 1950. That's Betty Hutt and Fred Astaire. The Man-Eater of Cumayan. And that has Wendell Corey in that. That's about a hunter going up against a lion that's threatening his life in Africa. Alaska Seas from 1954. And so I think those are the rest of the Kino releases. Harriet from 2019 got a 4K upgrade. So that's previously been issued on Blu-ray, but gets the 4K treatment. Blood on the Sun from 1945, James Cagney in that one. That's another Kino release. And we also have Fear is the Key from 1972, and we have The Shaolin Plot from 1977. Those are two more Arrow releases, which I didn't get review copies of. Those are out there as well. So February 20th, we'll move up to February. Well, one more February title from the previous week. Gomer Pyle, the complete series. Gomer Pyle USMC has been issued by CBS, DVD, and Paramount on Blu-ray for the first time, and it also includes the original Gomer Pyle pilot from the Andy Griffith Show, vintage sales presentational clip, audio commentaries on certain episodes. The transfers are terrific on these. If you're a fan of Gomer Pyle, it's well worth your money to get the upgrade, and you can get them. There are good sales on this to get them at a decent price. So Gomer Pyle, if you are a fan of it, and, you know, how can you not like Gomer Pyle, right? I mean,
before we move on, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this. Sure. It was one of my favorite films from 2023, and it got a home release from Third Window Films, a movie called River by Junta Yamaguchi. It's a film from the same team that did Beyond the Infinite 2 Minutes about 2 years ago, two, three mm-hmm. years ago. And it's a film about a small inn in very rural Japan that finds himself in a time loop of 2 minutes. But they're aware that they're in a time loop of 2 minutes. So it's every 2 minutes, everything resets, but they're trying to figure out what's going on, what's happening. Some people try to take advantage of what's going on because it's both the managers of the inn, the employees of the inn, the customers of the inn, everything else. And because it was shot on location, there actually is a weather component. They got hit with like a once in a decade storm. And so they had to work around that. And as you watch the film, while the weather changes, it actually accompanies certain emotional aspects of the story that's taking place. They made some adjustments to the script as they went, but nothing significant to change it overall. It includes a trailer, an hour-long making-of documentary, and an almost 18-minute interview with the director. It is some lo-fi, rom-com, sci-fi stuff. It's a beautiful presentation on the home release. Highly recommend it. I've got a Czech copy, as you've talked about getting those, so I can't speak on what all comes with the retail edition, but I absolutely loved this movie last year and cannot recommend it enough if you are looking for something just a little different that is relatively new but you may not have checked out.
Very good. Good. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, good to know. That's why we have you here. Keep us on track and not let anything fall by the wayside. So, yeah, we'll go to February the 20th. Darkman, Sam Raimi's Darkman being issued on 4K from Scream Factory.
Yep.
And that's, that's first film after Evil Dead 2 that he did, and it was his attempt at a superhero film. He had done previously, he had attempted to get the rights to a superhero franchise, but there weren't any that were available at that time, so he created his own. And Darkman is it's a mostly successful film. I think sometimes the characterizations of the characters aren't as well drawn as I would prefer them to be sometimes, but it's an exercise in style, and Larry Drake is a good villain. Liam Neeson is makes a good superhero, as it were, in the film. And, you know, there's a lot of, like I said, terrific examples of Sam Raimi's command of the camera and command of filmmaking in general. Good-looking transfer from the original negative in Dolby Vision, supervised by Bill Pope, the cinematographer who would go on to later do The Matrix. You get all the stuff from the previous Blu-ray, which includes all kinds of deleted scenes, about 40 minutes worth, and interviews and making of featurettes and audio commentaries. And there's new audio commentary on this one, actually, and a archival with Bill Pope. So anyway, Darkman getting the 4K Ultra HD treatment from Scream Factory. Just wanted to bring that one up and
And it's a good one too. It is a good 4K edition of the film, particularly mm-hmm. if you compare it against the Blu-ray. And I checked it out going back and forth between the new commentary with Josh Rubin. If you're mm-hmm. not familiar, he's a filmmaker who did Werewolves Within,
mm-hmm.
Which is a great horror comedy mystery, which is apparently based on a video game. If you saw the movie and didn't realize it, it's based on a computer game. But Josh Rubin is a self-proclaimed super fan of Darkman, would love to do his own version, pseudo-reboot, and just listening to him geek out with the other gentleman who's on there, Justin Beam of Reverend Entertainment. It is really insightful, and actually part of the reason why I kept going back and forth between the commentary and not is the fact that I'd get so distracted by the commentary, I'd stop watching the movie.
Yep.
So
easy to do.
Something to keep in mind.
Yes. Good stuff. That's, I didn't get a chance to listen to the commentary, so that's good to know. Yeah. So Leviathan is, competition for the Abyss in the summer of 1989. They both were issued that year. And this is another underwater thriller. This one directed by George P. Cosmatos, who would go on to do, Tombstone a couple of years later. Previously had done Rambo, First Blood Part Two. And the horror film of unknown origin, which I'm a huge fan of. This stars Peter Weller, Richard Crenna, Daniel Stern, Ernie Hudson, Hector Elizondo. Terrific score by Jerry Goldsmith. It's, like I said, monster on loose on board an underwater vessel, and it's very similar to Alien, except it's underwater. It's a terrific transfer. Transfer, audio, video, terrific. It's just not my favorite film of this type. But, you know, it has its thrills. The creature design is by Stan Winston, the legendary Stan Winston. And so if you are a fan of Leviathan, I got to tell you, the transfer is great on this, the audio and video both. And so I just wanted to mention that. And The Last Castle from 2001. That stars James Gandolfini and Robert De Niro. Robert Redford is what I meant to say. And this directed by Rod Lurie. And basically it's Robert Redford going up against James Gandolfini as he tries to break up the system of corruption in the prison in which he's been sent to. And you get the audio commentary by Rod Lurie and HBO First Look featurette and deleted scenes. So, that's a 4K upgrade, too, for the first time ever for The Last Castle. And
I had wanted to review that one, and they were like, we have it limited, but I can send you Thomas Crown. And so I said thank you because, you know, I want to cover stuff. But yes. I love The Last Castle, and so I've been hoping that 4K would be a good one.
Yeah, good transfer. Good transfer. Very, very, they did a great job with that. So just want to run through a couple more of these for the 20th so we can go ahead and get to the last day, as it were.
Ooh, I have some for the 20th.
Sure. Yeah. Just a couple more here that I was going to mention. Nothing But a Man from 1964 is a landmark film about it's about an African-American railroad worker in the early 60s trying to maintain his respect in a racist small town near Birmingham, Alabama. It was kind of a film that was way ahead of its time, made during the civil rights when civil rights activism was at its peak. Starring Ivan Dixon and directed by Michael Romare, getting a Criterion release for the first time with some new extras out on Blu-ray. So Nothing But a Man from 1964, and The Heroic Trio and The Executioners is a double feature starring Michelle Yeoh from 1993. These films are, I think they're connected. I think one is the sequel to the other.
Yes.
I didn't get a review copy of that, but just wanted to mention it. And I have the Hanna-Barbera Superstars 10, which is a set of all of the in 1987, the legendary animators William Hanna and Joseph Barbera, they brought forth a series of 10 feature-length animated films to TV, and they were sold into syndication, and they are Yogi's Great Escape, Scooby-Doo Meets the Boo Brothers, Jetsons Meets the Flintstones, Yogi Bear and the Magical Flight of the Spruce Goose, Top Cat and the Beverly Hills Cats, The Good, the Bad, and Huckleberry Hound, Rockin' with Judy Jetson, Scooby-Doo and the Ghoul School, Scooby-Doo and the Reluctant Werewolf, Yogi and the Invasion of the Space Bears, and you also get two bonus programs, Scooby Goes Hollywood from 1979 and Yogi's Ark Lark from 1973. That's quite a banger of a set, and I think you can get it for just a little over $60. So if you're a fan of Hanna-Barbera animation, the Hanna-Barbera Superstars 10 is a Warner Archive release. Warner Archive, they always do a great job with their remasters, so just wanted to mention that.
If I remember correctly, you can also get those individually. So if you don't want to buy the set, you can also get them individually.
Right. But the individual releases are about $20, I think, or something, $15 or $20. So, you know, you might.
Then you may as well.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yep. So anyway, and Drifter is another title that I had that was released on the 20th. And Drifter was trying to find my review copy as we talk here. Yeah, here it is. It was a director, Pat Rocco. He was a gay filmmaker in the early 70s, and his career was kind of a. He was kind of swept under the rug because of his homosexuality, but his films are getting rediscovered, and this is one of them, Drifter, and it's basically about a drifter, as you might imagine, who moves out to Southern California, Los Angeles, and it's about the odyssey of him as he wanders through a series of relationships with men and women. It's an excellent snapshot of Los Angeles in the early 70s, if nothing else. It's a 2K restoration from the original 16mm AB negatives preserved by the UCLA Film and Television Archive. And I'd never seen this, but like I said, it's kind of a reworking of the same themes as Midnight Cowboy, which had won an Oscar 5 years previously. So audio commentary here by the film historian Finley Freebert, 4 short films by Pat Rocco. So Drifter from Kino Cult. It's part of their cult label, which they've just recently launched. So there you go. And I think that covers all of the 20th releases that I have, but I'm going to let you
I only have one from the 20th.
Have one more. Let me get this out of the way before I forget it. King, a film record, Montgomery to Memphis, is a 3-hour documentary that covers basically the entire civil rights activism years of Martin Luther King through film, archival film footage. And you have some actors and celebrities at the time who appear on camera occasionally, Paul Newman, Harry Belafonte, Ruby Dee, Ben Gazzara, Charlton Heston, James Earl Jones in this, appearing on camera in between the footage. But this was a Academy Award nominee for Best Documentary Feature Film in 1970. It's a powerful record of Martin Luther King and his activism in his brief, short life. And never before available on Blu-ray. So King, a film record, Montgomery to Memphis. I highly recommend that one, and the transfer is good on that as well. And that covers my stuff in the 20th. And now you can go ahead. Sorry.
mine is a 4K, first-time 4K release from Sony Pictures Home Entertainment for a Satoshi Kon film by the name of Paprika. If you're not familiar with Satoshi Kon, he has directed 4 films in his career, and I believe 1 TV show. He passed away before he could do anything more, but he is the director behind Perfect Blue, Tokyo Godfathers, Millennium Actress, and then Paprika. And all 4 of the 4 that I've seen, the 3 that I've seen, Paprika, Millennium Actress, and Perfect Blue, they're more adult stories. Even if Millennium Actress could be shown to a child, the way that they are structured is they're adult entertainment that just so happens to be animated. With Paprika, what we're dealing with is a situation in which a researcher / psychoanalyst uses what they call a dream machine to go into the dreams of their patients in order to look at what it is that is bothering them and then help them deal with whatever is the issue, whether it's anything from general anxiety to significant trauma in their lives, and help them through their dreams explore it. Well, someone steals their experimental equipment that does not have protective gauges on it, and the people that have stolen it start invading other people's dreams. And so this is very adult, not for children animation. And it is beautifully and carefully restored to 4K. There is all the original bonus features included with this, but there's also a 8.5-minute behind the scenes restoration featurette where you get to listen to some people that are on the new restoration team that were also on the original production team for this film when it released in 2006, and some people that are just from the restoration team and how they shared some stuff with the original team to make sure that this reproduction was still within the same tone and ideas of what Khan would have wanted. Because there are some instances where the HDR, for example, might be, because of that natural lighting, might shift the tone of what it is the original animation was trying to convey between dream sequences and real sequences. And so they worked with that original team to make sure that any changes still kept in line with those ideas. Now, before I'd mention the Steelbooks and how they can be really great, I don't know if you can see this or not, because on my end, my screen's frozen, you're moving fine. But on this thing, I got a review copy, and the whole top of the case is dented in, and when you open it up, it's already ripping down the seam. So I don't have the movie in this case. It is a beautiful constructed case with great artwork, but it's useless in terms of protecting the actual movie. And so I took the strip that was on the back that has all the information, put the discs in just a regular generic case, and that's what's on my shelf because this thing can't protect it. And that's one of the downsides to Steelbooks, is that when they get damaged, you can't just swap it for something else. So that's at least something to keep in mind if you plan on picking this up. But I do highly recommend it if you've seen Khan's other work, or if you've gotten curious about it and want to check it out, this 4K is a great, great version of this film.
Good to know. Yeah, that was one that I did not get. So, yeah, again, you're filling in the blanks.
You know, there's some you've mentioned that I can tell you for sure we requested and did not get. So I am right there with you. But, you know, there's so many of us and that's so right. Limited product. I totally get that.
That's true, and this all works in tandem. That's why I'm glad to have you on, because you get some things I don't and vice versa, so that it all works out. Yeah. So we'll move to February the 27th, and we'll just run through these real quick.
Sure.
Because you have a life, and I don't want to hold you up.
Yeah, I'm not trying to hold you up from dinner.
No, it's okay. It's all good. This is a busy man that I'm talking to here, so he's got small kids, and we all know how that goes. Most of us know how that goes. I know I do, so anyway. Southern Comfort is a Vinegar Syndrome release. I don't get any of the Vinegar Syndrome review product, unfortunately. I used to, and that kind of threw me off the list. I don't know why, but whatever. But Southern Comfort is one of my favorite films of the early 80s, directed by Walter Hill, who also made The Warriors, among many other things. And this was the second film he made after The Warriors. I think it's as good as The Warriors, maybe better. And if you haven't seen it, I would highly recommend this one. It's a new 4K Ultra HD upgrade. And Little Darlings is a film that was tied up in limbo because of the music rights for years and years and years. Nobody ever thought this was going to ever get a release of any kind on disc. Well, it's out on 4K, ladies and gents, courtesy of Vinegar Syndrome. And so I did get a chance to look at this one, and I got a copy of this one, and it's the transfer is quite good on this, I will say. But Southern Comfort, I have the old Blu-ray from Shout Factory. Didn't see a need to really upgrade on that one. But Little Darlings, because it was not ever available, just wanted to know about that. So yeah, if you're a fan of Little Darlings, and the film itself is it's okay. It's kind of a product of its time. It's about two girls going to summer camp who are in a race to see who can lose their virginity fastest. But it does have its fans. So anyway, The Roaring Twenties is a gangster film starring James Cagney and Humphrey Bogart, getting a 4K release for the first time ever, 1939 film. And this has quite a few new extras from Criterion on here, as well as the 4K upgrade for the first time. Wonka, the recent you know, I guess prequel to the Willy Wonka, the latest installment in the Willy Wonka franchise, getting a 4K and Blu-ray release, steelbook and regular. So, yeah, Gunfight at the OK Corral and Fear and Desire are two 4K upgrades from Kino Studio Classics. So those did get, like I said, upgraded. And Next Goal Wins, which is a film from tail end of last year that got a Blu-ray release from, I guess that's Disney or Fox. They control the Fox, yeah. Monk, the complete fourth season, that's a Kino Studio Classics release as well. Blu-ray issue on that. All the episodes have been upgraded with 4K transfers, even though it's a Blu-ray set. And let's see, Sophie Scholl, The Final Days, was an Oscar nominee for Best Foreign Film in 2005. It's the true story of Germany's most famous anti-Nazi heroine. And it stars Julie Jentsch and as the young co-ed turned fearless activist. And you get the making of Sophie Scholl, deleted scenes, historical interviews. It's the first time ever Blu-ray release and a new 4K restoration on this film. The New York Times called it a gripping true story, challenges you to gauge your own courage, and it is a beautiful film. Won the Best Actress for the European Film War Awards. So Sophie Scholl, The Final Days, Kino releasing that one. And one final release that I received was Contagion, Steven Soderbergh's pandemic film, I guess you would say, that was kind of ahead of its time. In 2011, it was released, and then during the actual pandemic in 2020, people started returning to this one, and it's getting a new 4K release, going back to the original source material, and quite stunning, the transfer. No new extras, just the archival features, reality of Contagion, Contagion Detectives, and how a virus changes the world, but those are all good featurettes there, pretty informative, and like I said, Contagion getting a 4K Ultra HD release from the good folks at Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers proper, not Warner Archive. So, and that's all that I got for the month of February. And is there anything that you have you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
Very quickly, to add on just as an FYI with Wonka, I was going through that and noticed that the audio in the bonus features when you go through it digitally – are louder at whatever volume you have than the movie proper. And when you put in the disc, the audio on both the bonus features and the movie on the feature are almost identical. So just keep that in mind. Also, I thought, as per usual, the video component of the 4K disc just had more detail than the digital copy, but be aware of that should you decide to check out Wonka. Apparently it's coming available on Max on the 8th as well, if you want to stream it, if you haven't seen it. I liked it. And I've also seen that instead of the 27th, it may be coming out on the 5th. I don't know why they would have moved the date, even though they sent out stuff with official copy that says it's coming out on the 27th. Next Goal Wins is available to stream right now on Hulu and Disney Plus. I would recommend checking it out if you like Taika's stuff. It has about a 30-minute long featurette about the making of the movie, which certainly I felt helped me appreciate this movie that I didn't realize is not only – I knew it was a true story, based on a true story, but they are adapting it from the documentary that came out in 2014, and I didn't realize that. And I found the discussion of it, as well as having – watch the featurette, then going to watch the movie, made the framing of the movie make a lot more sense. But sort of like other projects we've talked about, Taika comes with a little bit of he's either your style or not. So that'll sort of inform whether or not Next Goal Wins will speak to you. I do want to take a minute to recommend two films that are out. One is a, I believe, first-time HD release, and I hope I pronounced this correctly, Yasuharu Hasibi's Black Tie Killers, which is another Radiance Films review. This mm-hmm. is from, 1966. So it's sort of in the pop cinema era of Japanese cinema history. It's slightly music video-y. It's a crime thriller, but it's mostly a spy spoof. But it also has some really interesting post-World War II ideas that it explores regarding young generation versus older generation, men versus women. It's got a lot of interesting things in it, and it runs about 87 minutes, so it moves super fast. And because, again, this is a restoration from Radiance in addition to the usual essay and everything else, you've also got some on-disc features to help explore it further. And then last but not least, a modern release from Wellgo USA, Dr. Xian and the Lost Talisman. This is a film that if I were to describe it quickly, it would be a funnier Constantine. It's about a guy who's the grandfather of a shaman. He does not go into the family business. He's actually more of a con man, and he's an actual doctor. He has a medical degree, and he uses the idea of I'm going to perform exorcisms to actually help diagnose patients and help them through sort of showmanship, except he gets a patient that puts him into a situation where the stuff that he was raised with that he didn't necessarily believe, he actually has to use. And the way that it's executed, when I say it takes itself seriously, it doesn't mind having fun, but the characters themselves understand that this is something that's going on. So it balances its tones of serious and scary and comedy very, very well. I would honestly say if they made a follow-up feature in a different circumstance with the same characters, it would be a franchise I would jump right on board for. So do recommend that. And from Wellgo, unfortunately with this one, it doesn't really have any good bonus features. A trailer, some previews, and I think like a 2-minute character bio where it's like, this is this actor, this is who they play, and here's some snippets from the movie. So it doesn't really give you any behind-the-scenes stuff, but the on-disc presentation is wonderful. So I would highly recommend that.
Well, that sounds like a ringing endorsement, as it were.
It's a good time. And sometimes, yeah. You know, you were talking about I forget the name of the collection, four films, winter, summer, spring.
You're right, Eric Romare, yeah.
There you go, where they speak to the human condition and there's mm-hmm. this wonderful art. And there is an absolute place for those movies, and we need those movies. We absolutely do. I can't remember the name of the director, but there's a movie, Afterlife, that Criterion released. Mm-hmm. It's a movie like that. We need these types of movies that ask us to sit with our existence, with our humanity. Sometimes, though, we just need to see somebody fight off spirits with a sword and hammer. Like, you know, sometimes you need pyrotechnics. It is okay to have both of those. Your vegetables and your sugary treats. Like, it's all good. We'll be right back.